Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And in this episode, what month is it, Lisa?
It is Pride Month.
And you know what that means? Pride movies.
Pride movies.
1999's Muppets from Space and 2022's Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. So this was my galaxy brain idea. I just, before we get into like what they're about, can I ask you, do you see it?
A little bit.
Okay. All right. So I'm not totally insane.
Yeah, it's still some galaxy brain in there. they're not exactly the same plot or premise. More along the lines of very similar... similesies.
Yeah, so my thought is, these are both movies that are on the surface, you know, kind of bizarre and quirky and like just a lot of weird stuff happening, but also on a deeper level are about a queer character feeling isolated and alone and unloved and trying to find some semblance of belonging in a world where they have kind of just been opened up to the possibilities of there being other places out there.
So what you're saying is you're outing Gonzo.
I'm outing Gonzo has been outed. It is official. Gonzo has actually officially been outed.
Okay.
In the most recent Muppet Baby series, they outed Gonzo officially.
Is that canon?
Yeah, Gonzo officially a non-binary character. But we knew that all along. There's a comic I cited all the time in reference to my own gender, which is there's a comic from 1984. It's my favorite piece of Gonzo media. It's literally single strip like newspaper comic, and it's Gonzo walking past a women's bathroom and then walking past a men's bathroom and then going into a third bathroom labeled whatever. So Gonzo's been out.
Because I always thought he was a whatever.
Yeah. They use whatever to describe both his species and his gender.
Okay.
He does consistently, as far as I'm aware, use he, him pronouns. So that's not a problem. We don't need to like switch up Gonzo's pronouns. But yeah, he's been adopted as a non-binary icon since the 80s, so it's nothing new to say that Gonzo is queer. And there's a great line in Muppets from Space when he's talking to Kermit and says, you know, I understand if you can't accept me as an alien, but this is something that makes sense to me and feels like who I've always been, or something along those lines. And it's right. Like, okay, that, like, nothing else in the movie screams queer allegory as much as that one, like, interaction.
It's, for those who don't know, or may have not listened to other podcasts, or it may have not been brought up earlier, you met Gonzo in person.
I did.
And cried.
I mean, I didn't even really get to meet him. Yeah, I guess we can get into the Gonzo story. I love Gonzo. The year that I first came to Wellington, within that year, so it was actually, like I moved here in 2017 and it happened in 2018, but it was within the 1 year, with the 1 year visa I had. They put on a show here called the Muppet Retrospectacle, which included Brett McKenzie, but also a whole lot of the Muppet performers, and they did live Muppet shows, but they also then, in different places around Wellington, showed Muppet movies and things like that. And I went with some friends to see Labyrinth. And it was really funny because I hadn't bought tickets to anything because I was like not earning a lot of money in my first year here. And a friend had spare tickets to Labyrinth and said, I think what he said was, there's some kind of puppeteer going to be there. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I was like, when we got there and I saw who was going to be there, I was like, hang on, you said some kind of... This is Dave Goals. This is the guy who does Gonzo. So he did like a talk before Labyrinth. And then he said he was going to be going to another location. I won't specify where, it doesn't matter. To do just like a whole just a talk, just where it would just be him talking about stuff and getting questions from audience. And it was paid. It was a paid event, but they said for people here, because it starts at the same time this movie ends, we're going to give you a code word, and if you use that, you can get in for free. So I sat through Labyrinth, and then I like raced to the other place. And I went in and said the code word, and I got in for free, and I sat in the back row, and I watched Dave Goals have this, you know, do this whole Q and like a whole like discussion about things and his process and whatever, and then do a Q&A, and someone asked him a question, and he said, "Oh, I've got a friend backstage who can help me answer that." And I just immediately started crying. Because I was like, oh my god, I'm going to see Gonzo. I'm going to see Gonzo in person. Like, it never crossed my mind it could be anyone else that he was going to bring out. I was just, like, I literally just burst into tears. And then he came out with Gonzo. And, like, it's so strange seeing a Muppet performer next to a Muppet. Because, like, when they're doing Muppet performing normally, you don't see the Muppet here. You just see the Muppet. But, like, Dave Goals is standing there clearly with his hand up Gonzo's ass and not doing ventriloquism. Like, they don't do that. So his mouth is moving when Gonzo's mouth is moving. But it was like, he felt alive. It felt like it was just Gonzo responding to things. And they did actually, someone asked a question about him being an alien in that. And he said, I think what he said was, "Well, we made a movie once that said I was an alien, but I think that was just a movie." So canonically, Gonzo not an alien. He's just a whatever. But it was, really, I don't know. I just got so emotional. I feel like this is the most starstruck I've ever been. And it was like a piece of cloth.
It's so very cute.
I love Gonzo. Yeah. I really love Gonzo.
To focus for a little second on the other movie.
Yeah, everything. I mean, we haven't even talked about Muppets from Space, actually. We just talked about my Gonzo experience.
Yeah. Everything Everywhere All at Once is, I don't say it's contentious, but, you know, I have heard people say they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think it's a absolute masterpiece of film.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, I would recommend watching it and probably turning the podcast off, or at least pausing it until you've watched it.
Yeah, we will get into spoilers. Absolutely. Yeah.
Every episode we have spoilers in it. It should be like, spoilers, these movies.
I think Everything Everywhere All at Once surprised me when we watched it the first time. Obviously, this wasn't our first time watching it. We went to see it in cinema. I knew I was going to love it. Like, it just, it seemed like my kind of film.
Yeah.
And I knew both before I watched it and after I watched it that there would be other people who would absolutely hate it. But it surprised me, A, in just how well made it was. Like, not just, you know, how interesting and fun it was, but, like, really well-made movie. And well-acted, well-written, everything about it is done really well. Even though it's totally off the wall. But then also surprised me in how good the reaction to it was overall. Like, we were, you know, rooting for it for awards season, and it did incredibly well. Like, to the point that, like, it, I can't remember, did it beat out Return of the King or meet the same record as it in terms of Oscars? But it also set a record for causing other films to go home without Oscars.
Right.
Like, there were 5 different other films that were nominated for multiple Oscars, and none of them got a single one because they all went to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
And it really amazed me how well it did on that, just in the awards circuit and in, you know, critical acclaim and stuff, because I knew that it was going to be a movie that would be up our alley. And, I mean, we also have both seen and enjoyed Swiss Army Man, which is another movie by the same directors.
The Daniels.
The Daniels, which is utterly bizarre movie.
Yeah.
It's, like, impossible to even describe it to someone without sounding like you're insane.
There's a dead body. And he can do everything.
It's a dead body played by Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's a buddy comedy between a corpse and Paul Dano.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's definitely our kind of movie.
Yeah, a really weird movie, but like really, really enjoyable. And I thought that this was going to be similar, but it is just, it's on another level for me. This is, I think, legitimately one of my favorite films of all time. Even though it's a, you know, pretty recent one.
Where do we want to start? For some reason, all the Muppets live together.
Yes. All the Muppets live together.
And Kermit seems like the only adult.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of across all Muppet canon that Kermit looks after everyone and is, you know, he runs the theater and he's the only responsible person. He's the only one who paid bills. And in this case, they all live in one big house together and Kermit's the only one who's, like, making sure the house is painted and yeah. everything is done. And everyone gets food on the table and, you know, he's just being a dad to all of the other Muppets.
Yeah.
I think it was a really good decision. I mean, I don't think it makes any sense in Muppet canon, but as we've already discussed, this isn't canon. It's just a movie they made for the Muppets to all live in one house. But I think it makes sense in the context of the theme, the central theme of this movie being that Gonzo, despite being surrounded by people,
feels alone.
Feels totally isolated.
The opening scene is set in Noah's Ark mythology,
mm-hmm.
where the flood is coming,
yeah.
and Gonzo tries to get on the Ark, and Noah's just like, you're not a real animal, and here's an umbrella, good luck being dead.
Yeah, like, the idea is, because Noah's Ark was that he brought in two of each animal,
yeah.
and there is no second
Gonzo. Yeah.
And it's, you know, this idea. And, it's, you know, it's hammered. They don't touch on it, which is interesting, because they have touched on it in previous movies, that Gonzo's best friend is Rizzo.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he lives in, he shares a room with him.
Yeah.
And Rizzo doesn't understand isolation, because I think it's Muppet Christmas Carol, where they say it, that Rizzo had 600 brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And he's like, wow, rats really don't understand this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that those two are paired up so much. And I mean, I know they're normally comic relief, and I guess that's, you know, that's the joy of it. But it's, yeah, interesting that, like, his best friend is someone who fundamentally can't understand the concept of feeling alone or yeah. isolated, or one of a kind, or a weirdo, you know.
And on the flip side, you get an Everything Everywhere All at Once. You get a very interesting love story about a first generation immigrant daughter who is well established as a lesbian, but because her grandfather is like old school Chinese, they're like, no, like, you have to hide it from him, you know, this bullshit, and basically causes Joy to literally go off the deep end to the point of becoming Everything Everywhere All at Once,
yeah.
and which is, you know, well, some sort of like multiverse skipping deity
yeah.
that has no mercy for anything and is yeah. trying to
Jabba Dubaki.
Yeah, trying to kill her mother.
So we do get the origin story of Jabba Dubaki, which apparently it wasn't in the script originally, and then they thought audiences needed it.
Yeah.
Which is an extreme version of what we see with Joy, because it's the version. So we with Everything Everywhere All at Once, we're in a, like, essentially our world, like our version of the universe.
Yeah.
And then there's all these split offs from it, like all these different alternate universes where every time a decision has been made, you know, a split off, you know, a splinter universe has happened. And Jabba Dubaki is a version of Joy, from another universe where her mother put so much pressure on her doing these experiments.
So, yeah, so
she literally splintered.
In the Alpha universe, they discover the multiverse,
mm-hmm.
and then her mother subjects her to the point where she is basically like, well, I can't remember they're calling it. Basically, like, doing the thing where you can steal powers from another universe.
Mm.
But because she's such a... It very much reminds me a lot of Turning Red. The overprotective Asian immigrant parents.
And the generational trauma.
Yeah. To the point where she pushes her too far and she literally becomes fractured and becomes every single joy all at once.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
And it's interesting because the joy that we get to know first, like one of the first shots we see of her is her clearly just disassociating, just totally not there. She's clearly suffering from depression. She obviously doesn't feel accepted or loved. And, you know, and it's this idea that she's trying to push her mother to... She really is pushing herself even to talk to her grandfather and explain to him that she's gay.
Yeah.
And she's been in a relationship with Becky for 3 years. So it's not, like, a new thing. It's not a phase. It's not... You know what I mean? Like, none of these dismissive things they can say about it. And her mother just steps in and is like, oh, this is Joy's really good friend.
Yeah.
And you can see the hurt in her in that moment. And it's, you understand, you know, that Alpha Joy, Joby Tabaki, is just the extreme of that. It's the, you know, the...
Yeah, so the Evelyn we follow, who's played by the fantastic,
Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh, yeah, thank you. Is the worst in the entire multiverse.
Yeah.
She is every single negative outcome for every single decision ever made.
Yeah.
She is running with her husband, played by...
Kihoi Kwan.
Kihoi Kwan, who came back to acting after years of being away.
He's so good in this movie.
Yeah. He's so good in every movie.
Yeah.
Failing laundromat in their house. Their apartment is above the laundromat. Everything, you know, they're being audited by the IRS, and that's like how the movie starts. It's really, really bizarre that she's just trying to organize receipts, and it gets into a little bit where Jamie Lee Curtis is playing the auditor, which is fantastic, and there's some fantastic scenes with Jamie Lee Curtis in it. Is, you know, she's going through receipts and being just like, you know, there's something wrong here. It's like, oh no, my wife mistakes her hobbies for business expenses.
Yeah.
And what you don't understand at that time in the movie, but obviously spoilers, like we've already mentioned, in other multiverse, in the multiverse, other worlds, she is the best at
Each of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's this concept that the Evelyn that we're following has given up on every single dream.
Yeah.
And has not succeeded at anything in her life. And that's what makes her the perfect Evelyn to tap into all these other multiverses, because she's had all these dreams.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the one that went and did the first thing that they wanted to do doesn't have all these other... hasn't, you know, even considered all these other options. Yeah. Where she, like, has the potential to do any of them, but has not actually gone out and done them.
Yeah. I apologize in advance if you hear any weird noises. There is some road construction going on, but we've got, you know, limited time as humans that don't do this full time. If you want to help us do it full time, find our website at takes2.co.nz and join our Discord server. Anyway, moving on. It's very interesting, like, this whole... Because, like, obviously, you know, everybody became an expert on the multiverse after watching, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And
it's so funny that this movie came out when there was a bunch of other multiverse movies coming out, because it's been in production to some extent since 2010.
Yeah.
When none of those were happening. It's weird how that kind of stuff...
Because in science fiction, it kind of becomes a trope and a throwaway episode. Obviously in Star Trek, it's a mirror universe where everyone's just evil.
Yeah.
And the human race are evil. There's a really weird and interesting mirror episode in Stargate SG-1, which basically leads Daniel to the point where he can warn his current timeline about an invasion that's happening, because it's already happened in their timeline, or in that universe. Flashpoint Paradox. There's a lot of really good incidences of showing the multiverse in a way to explain it to an audience who obviously don't need to be, you know, boggled by the concept of every decision you make has two outcomes, and therefore every single there is a world that that outcome, and then the massive butterfly effect that can cause. And it's very interesting watching this movie and their interesting technology, where it's all like, it reminds me very much of The Matrix in a way, where all their like their technology is like cobbled together garbage.
Yeah, I think it's definitely heavy inspiration from The Matrix.
Yeah, and then yeah, to be able to jump between like your abilities to jump between the multiverses, you have to do something completely and utterly random. And there's like a calculation, an algorithm they use to like, and it's just like the part of it is just like a communication universe. She just had to switch shoes and think about being in the supply closet.
Yeah.
And I was like, because there's so many little hints, and it's filmed in such a great way. Like if you sit there and really concentrate on the movie, there are so, like the second time round, there are so many little things. They come in like, there's one sequence I missed the first time I watched it, but I definitely got it this time, other than the giant circles on everything and the weird butt plug shaped awards.
Yeah.
Was the, there's a dead body in the Alpha universe when they're driving around in like a Winnebago with like all their, with their stuff in it. And it says, hail the bagel.
Right.
On a, like a, someone's like, you know, the end is nigh kind of apocalypse.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they're called. What are they called? When people hold signs, they've got a certain term.
I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, there's even like a scene where Evelyn and Waymond are hiding in the IRS building and they find some bagels and eat them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh, bagels. Bagels are a big theme in this. And I love that the bagel thing is just a big joke. Because the concept is, for those of you at home who don't know, that there's an everything bagel.
Yeah.
Where she's literally put everything on. On a bagel. So she's essentially created a massive black hole by putting everything on a bagel. I do want to talk about Evelyn a little bit because I want to, because our main, I feel like our main comparison is between Gonzo and Joy.
Yeah.
But I do think Evelyn also has similarities to Gonzo, or to, you know, to Muppets from Space Gonzo. For example, they're both the ones who, well, to some extent, they're both audience stand-ins, but also they're the ones who receive messages from other worlds.
That's true, yeah.
So Gonzo, at the beginning of Muppets from Space, after he's had this dream and he's feeling very isolated and misunderstood, and one of a kind and alone and a freak and a weirdo, gets
what are you doing
a message in a cereal saying...
That didn't look like cereal to me.
Okay, well, it was cereal.
It looks like the like gummy sour lilies.
Okay, well, you've obviously never seen American cereal before.
Probably the same sugar content.
yeah, so he gets messages in his cereal, you know, and it's basically he believes the messages are for him, even though it turns out they've been popping up around the world. And lo and behold, spoiler, they are for him.
Yeah.
But Gonzo sees these messages and no one else sees them or believes them. And in Everything Everywhere All at Once, we get when they're going to the IRS, Waymond like switches over to being Alpha Waymond, who's come from the Alpha universe to take over his body to communicate with Evelyn, and he's trying to explain to her multiverse theory and what's going on, and that there's someone who's going to come looking for her, and all the, you know, all this stuff in a very brief period of time, and she doesn't understand it, and then no one else has seen it happen or heard it or knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they're both, you know, our protagonist who's going through this. And also, I mean, I would say Evelyn is queer as well. Because we do get to see glimpses of a universe.
Oh, yeah.
Where Evelyn is in love with Deirdre, the IRS lady.
And I will put a caveat on it that they have hot dogs for fingers.
They do have hot dogs for fingers and in that universe.
Exist in a universe where people use their feet as hands, and it is... more disturbing.
Yeah, I was going to say unsettling for you, who does not like feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, but there clearly is a connection there, and that's a connection she's able to make.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's been introduced from very early in the film that she's been brought up in this family where that would not be acceptable. And, you know, and she says to Joy, you know, you're lucky you have a mother who will at least accept this. Yeah. Even though she consistently accidentally misgenders Joy's girlfriend. And there's a bit later on when she finds out about Jobu Chupaki where she says, despite, you know, on the surface appearing accepting of Joy being gay, says like, oh, you're the reason she thinks she's gay.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So deep down, you don't believe that she's gay. Yeah. You don't accept it, no matter what it is you're trying to portray here. But it's a real deep-seated cultural belief that that's not acceptable and not okay and not how things should be. And I believe that that's something she's internalized in herself. And it, you know, works out fine in her universe because she does find Waymond and she is in love with Waymond, and yeah, that's a real connection and is very healthy for her, even though when we meet them, they're not at a healthy point in their marriage. But yeah, so I would say that she is some flavor of queer, but has repressed it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, plays into these themes as well, that she isn't accepting herself for what she is. And Gonzo, as if that's a Spencer universe and everything everywhere all at once.
Because there's moments in the movie where you see flashes of the other universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was a Muppet one.
A Muppet universe, that would be fun. There was one where there were pinatas.
Yeah, there was one where there were pinatas.
There's obviously one where there are rocks, where life hasn't formed on Earth.
Yeah, and that's, you know, beautifully desolate. Yeah, I can't, because it's a flash, and there's lots of like animated.
Yeah.
And some interesting other like universes, but yeah, there's no Muppet universe, which I think
there is a very cool sequence where they just like flash through a whole load of universes. Apparently, that was a year's worth of filming different short sequences.
It deserved it. Like, I know there's people out there who don't like this movie, and you know, whatever your opinion's, your opinion. You know, we're not here arguing with you over your opinion because it's not fair when you don't have a voice back. But if you want a voice back, join our Discord.
Well, one of those people is already in our Discord and will tell us how much they don't like this film. But can I just say, while we're on that, there is the VFX team for Everything Everywhere All at Once is 9 people.
Yeah.
And most of their shots were just done by 5 people. And the nine people included the 2 directors. None of the 9 people have any training in VFX. They all just learned it by themselves to do it.
Yeah.
So you watch that film and you think all of the VFX in this were done mostly by 5 people.
Yeah.
That's shocking. Like, I mean, if you look at, I mean, compare it to any of the other multiverse movies that came out. You had, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home. You had Multiverse of Madness.
Flash.
You know, Flash. Like, all these huge budget superhero movies with, like, crazy VFX budgets, like, multiple VFX companies, teams, across the globe. And then this movie had, for most of it, 5 people working in the VFX who have no training. That's amazing.
Talking of the directors for a second.
Yeah.
You did make an interesting comment when we watched it.
Was it that Daniel Scheinert cast himself as the BDSM guy who gets whipped by Michelle Yeoh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were like, is this a Quentin Tarantino moment?
Is this equivalent to Quentin Tarantino casting himself as a person who sucks Selma Hayek's toes?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it could be a nod to that. Like, I feel like that's the kind of thing these guys would do. I thought it was very funny. It didn't come across as like this is something this guy is into, but who knows? I just thought it was quite funny. To cast himself in that role.
Yeah, the movie itself feels everything everywhere all at once. Feels like it's a journey of like discovery and a journey of self-worth
So it's Muppets from Space.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. Thank you for interrupting. Love you. Yeah, where you have like this also like the ultimate point is acceptance.
Yeah.
And it's paralleled really well with Muppets of Space, even though it came out after. You have a bunch of people, you know, the Muppets, I get it, but, you know, they've got a long-standing history together.
Mm-hmm.
They are an internationally worldwide recognized franchise. It's not like, this is not like weirdly new that we're just pulling out. Everybody, most people know what a Muppet is.
Yeah.
Or if they don't know what a Muppet is, they would recognize a Muppet.
Yeah.
You know, a named character. And, you know, it's sort of like Joy and Gonzo don't get the support from their friends and their family. So they've gone this sort of like journey of self-discovery. Problem is Joy's one is through the multiverse and is therefore damaging to everybody else. Mainly because of the black hole / bagel.
Yeah, and that she's just completely delved into nihilism and believing that nothing matters, nothing is important.
But like Gonzo has hope, but the bad guys are the American government, which seems like a really low-hanging fruit.
I do think it's funny because there's a connection there because obviously in the other one it's the IRS agents fighting them.
Yeah. It cracks me up because it does feel like a very American, like, it's so weird because it's a Muppet movie and there are so many random cameos in it that I spent the entire, because this was the first time I watched it, to my knowledge anyway, watching just random people turn up, like Hulk Hogan, but when he was in his like bad guy Hollywood era, which was like a random piece of like wrestling history that I'd I don't think about on a daily basis, unlike the Roman Empire.
It must have been like at the time, because the next movie they made after this was it's a very very Merry Muppet Christmas movie, which we watched together, you know, where Kermit did 9/11, and in that one didn't they have like a Fear Factor like episode happening where like they were gonna eat Rizzo or something, like they have these very specific like moments in cultural history that just date them so much. It's so weird,
like Katie Holmes
Dawson's Creek
playing her character from Dawson's Creek
and Joshua Jackson as apparently that happened because they were filming on the same soundstage as them, so then they were like, just come along, just be in character as Dawson's Creek characters.
I think the weirdest one, because you know, this is, you know, it's 1999.
Mm-hmm.
It is a predominantly, you know, I know the writing, they always put in like jokes that kids will go over their heads for the adults who are taking their kids to these movies.
Yeah.
Why the hell is Ray Liotta in this movie?
He's also in B-Movie, in fairness, which, because that was how, like, I remember hearing about Ray Liotta first was through B-Movie. Like, I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah.
Ray Liotta, he's great at it.
He's absolutely fantastic.
He's so good. He does not phone it in.
Yeah, he is playing a security guard. What the hell? So it's a government organization hidden as a concrete company.
Yeah.
And he is the security guard on the front gate, mm-hmm. and Miss Piggy comes up to him. So they've been basically given like superhero, like,
they've been given like weirdly specific, like, spy.
Yeah.
Tools that are also doubling as like Muppet style jokes.
Yeah. And Miss Piggy gets like a mind control spray and then sprays Ray Liotta, and he's basically just automatically in love with her and is just like really pliable to everything.
He's just so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
He just turns into such a nice guy.
It's so weird seeing Ray Liotta though. And we've got Kathy Griffin plays a security guard who falls in love with Animal.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, it starts off with her chasing them and then Animal running after her. And then it's like the opposite again. It's very like Scooby-Doo, Doors kind of moment. Obviously with the kids from Dawson's Creek. And making mention about the fact Dawson should be there because he loves science fiction stuff, where they're all waiting around, like, you know,
To see the aliens
To come see in. The aliens land. There's a couple of other ones listed as cameos, but I don't feel like they're, you know, technically cameos. Yeah. David Arquette. I'd forgotten about David Arquette.
So David Arquette is in this. I think he's. I don't know if he's in all three. They made three movies back to back. Well, not back to back. They weirdly released them. All three of them were released the same year as the Star Wars prequels.
That's interesting.
So this was planning. Released. So this was released the same year as Phantom Menace, and then it's a very Merry Muppet Christmas. Movie was released same year as Attack of the Clones, and then Muppet's Wizard of Oz was the third one, which I guess we probably will cover at some point because it's a Wizard of Oz movie. There is clearly something.
Which Wizard of Oz movie are we going to do?
I don't know. We'll figure that out.
The original with the asbestos, or the new one with James Franco, or the new
one? No, because the James Franco one is not. That's like a prequel, right?
So is Wicked. Coming out.
Those
now.
Are both prequels. Yeah. So that's fine. We can compare Muppets Wizard of Oz to the original at some point. Anyway, so just to cover off this weird non-trilogy. What was I going to say about it? Oh yeah, I'm not sure if David Arquette is in Muppets Wizard of Oz. But he's obviously in this as like a weird sadistic
scientist.
And
he's
then,
torturing rats for no reason.
And then in the next one he's the angel that comes to help Kermit. So it's a weird... I don't know. Why did they do that?
When you see David Arquette, mm-hmm. what do you think? Like, what's the first movie image that comes to your mind?
Scream.
Yeah. It is Scream. It's very weird. Because he feels like a very, like, Justin Long, like, actor.
Yeah.
For those who don't know who Justin Long is, you should look into it. It's very interesting. He has been... and so much stuff, but just never been, like, a household name because they are just always, like, weird B-movies.
I feel like he was getting there when he... because he did, like, a bunch of rom-coms at one point, like with, like, Drew Barrymore and stuff. So I feel like he was heading into household name territory there, but then just never really made it there.
Because other than playing the gay porn star in... is it Knocked Up? Oh, no. It's Zach and Mary Make a Porno.
Right.
I always get those confused for some reason. Mainly because Seth Rogen plays the same character in every movie. Rob Schneider's also in this.
Yeah, Rob Schneider.
Talking of people that
it?
Play the same character.
Yeah.
We just needed...
David Spade.
Adam Sandler to make it a hat trick. But yeah, it's Justin Long. Yeah, it's very Jeepers Creepers was like the big like because he's in Galaxy Quest. The movie we covered at our live show. Yeah,
that's his first movie was Galaxy Quest. But he's in like Die Hard 4. He's in some.
Yeah,
weird...
he's in Die. Oh my god, I forgot he was in Die Hard 4.
He's in a weird selection of movies. I feel like I've seen a lot of Justin Long movies.
Yeah. Well, I just like feel like he's in a lot of stuff. David Arquette I've already looked at on this phone, which is interesting. Which means that we've talked about him before.
Have we? Well, maybe we talked about him on the other Muppet episode.
Possibly.
Because he was certainly in that.
He was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Was he? I don't even remember that.
So you... Where's Galaxy Quest?
No,
Justin Long. Oh, that's Justin Long.
Oh my god. You've lost your mind. David Arquette was in, like... Never Been Kissed and She's the Man. He was in, like, a bunch of, like... rom-commy movies as side characters.
I forgot he was in Airheads. Anyway.
As playing people's brothers. He played the main character's brother in like a bunch of different rom-coms in the early 2000s, I think. But, I don't know. Anyway, we're getting really sidetracked here. Why are we talking about David Arquette so much?
Because we're talking about the weird cameos and I was going to say everywhere Muppets. Muppets from space. Muppets in space. Muppets from
space.
Yeah. There was a weird... Pigs in Space thing that was Muppet related, right?
Yeah, Pigs in Space was a segment on the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
With Link Hogthrob? Was that his name? I think his name is Link Hogthrob, the main...
It feels like an adult joke.
The main pig in Pigs in Space, the main astronaut. I was going to say he was like a Zap Brannigan character, but I guess really he was like a Shatner character, right? That's where that comes from.
Because, you know, where they got the idea from Zap Brannigan for what, right?
I assume Shatner.
No, it's partially Shatner and partially Kirk.
Right,
so they've taken Kirk and put, like, Shatner's personality in Kirk.
Right.
Which makes, like, the perfect sort of, you know, character that Zap Brannigan is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, makes sense.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know where to go from there. There's not really cameos in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
No, it's just...
But there's a lot of... You know, there's a few big names in there.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Being the IRS agent and the hot dog fingers and...
James Hong.
Yeah.
Who is fantastic in literally everything that he's ever
in. I love it when he gets his mech suit.
Yeah, he does get a mech suit in it.
Made out of like printers and coffee machines. It's fantastic.
Because he's in a wheelchair for a bunch of the movie, and then he's like, screw this.
Yeah.
Just in a mech suit. Kihoi Kwan, like absolutely stunning comeback for someone who hadn't been in Hollywood for a very long time.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh is also spectacular in everything she does. Stephanie Hsu, I had not seen in anything before this, but I think she did incredible. I think my most controversial opinion about Everything Everywhere All at Once is that I think the supporting actress Oscar should have gone to Stephanie Hsu over Jamie Lee Curtis. I think she did fantastic as Joy and Jobu Dubaki.
Yeah.
And separating those characters, but then also making them the same person and, you know, playing her across all these universes and into the nihilism and into everything. And then also the vulnerable side of her where she admits that really the reason she wanted to find Evelyn and bring her with her into this journey was she was hoping that Evelyn would see something positive in it.
Yeah.
Or see something that she didn't see that made it so that it, you know, it wasn't that everything was pointless.
Yeah.
I think she did a fantastic job. She's so good. The only other thing I've seen her in, I believe, is The Fall Guy, which we saw last week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is a fun movie.
Which, yeah, wasn't really a supporting character, unfortunately. Just sort of like in the background to like whoop it in the beginning, lay some like little groundwork of like, I'm going to be this in the future, and then just be like, let's get spoilers, Jason Momoa, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. Now you got me thinking about Ryan Gosling.
No, stop thinking about Ryan Gosling. He's not in these movies.
Yeah, I'm just Ken. I had a thought and you derailed me.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. That happens. It happens sometimes. You know, we're all here. Nihilism. Something about nihilism. Oh, yeah, yeah. Just this whole... That's right. I've gone back. We're back on the tracks, folks. Costuming.
Oh, costuming is fantastic.
The costume they picked for Joy's, like... I can't pronounce it. I'm going to do an Evelyn on it. What was it?
Oh, Jobu Dubaki?
Yeah. As a villain, just absolutely fantastic.
I just think of the time where she calls her Choo Choo Chewbacca.
Yeah. Raccoon. This is where Raccoon comes from for those people who have been listening to this podcast for a while. When I keep saying Raccoon instead of Ratatouille because it is absolutely. That whole sequence is fantastic. Getting back to the costumes, one of her outfits just looks like a hoodie, like a hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
Or a long hoodie that's made out of stuffed bears.
Right.
And it is one of the most, like, unnervingly comfortable looking things I've ever seen. Because, you know, it's like a doll in certain circumstances is just a doll.
Mm-hmm.
But at 3 a.m. in the morning when the light is, shining on it through the window on its face and it looks creepy and, like, alive... Creepy.
Yeah.
A teddy bear. Cute, cuddly, you know, we've all had them. a hoodie made out of teddy bears, kind of disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of a throwaway gag where a guy makes a pimp suit out of Beanie Babies, because it's when the Beanie Babies have like dropped to bottom and he's basically immortal because none of the other competing pimps can stab him.
What are you talking about? What's that in?
I feel like it's Robot Chicken or something. Oh, okay. Unrelated. But the other outfit that stands out to me, other than her weird, like, creepy mime, we're close to the end of the movie, or the green in the Alpha universe, the Elvis, just everything about it is just, it's such, it's gorgeous. It's everything about her outfits are amazing.
Mm.
And then at the same time, when Gonzo's people finally arrive, they're also wearing fabulous outfits. And
yeah,
like,
yeah, they're all in, like, yeah, disco outfits.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because obviously she dresses as Elvis.
Yeah.
Part of her, but with, like, what are they called? Demontes or whatever? She's, like, bedazzled her face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The costuming in that movie is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's one of the... one of the best costume design movies. Did it win? Is there an Oscar for costume design?
Yep.
Did it win it?
I don't remember, but okay. I can find out very quickly.
Because it, like, you know, big epic science fiction tends to win them. Because obviously the costumes are, like, very big.
Period,
like,
dramas often. Yeah, yeah, as yeah.
Because
well.
Obviously those are expensive to make, as they were, would have been in the time.
Yeah, and it's, like, to do with the accuracy of them and things, yeah, like that.
Like, I feel like Dune probably won something for costume. Was at least nominated for it.
Let's have a look. What did it win? It won Best Original Screenplay.
Deserved.
Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures, Original Score. Best Achievement for Music Written for Motion Pictures, Original Song.
Yep.
Oh, no, sorry. No, sorry. It was nominated for those.
Okay.
Sorry, I thought it would have all the winners for it. Sorry. So it was nominated for Original Score and Original Song. Didn't win them. Won Best Motion Picture of the Year. It won Achievement in Directing. Best Performance by an Actress in a Lead Role for Michelle Yeoh. Best Performance for an Actress Supporting Role, Jamie Lee Curtis. Stephanie Hsu was nominated, but obviously they can't both win. Ki Hoi Kwon won Best Performance of an Actor in a Supporting Role. Nominated for Costume Design,
right,
but didn't win, and won for Film Editing. So I can try and find out what won that year for Costume Design.
2022, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what was... I can't even remember what was nominated alongside of it. I was definitely... We had watched most of the movies that year.
Yeah. If it's Dune, I'm sorry.
I mean, it could be. It could be.
I do think the costuming in Dune Part 2 was better, but that's... yeah, there was
Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Okay.
Yeah, the nominees were... Everything Everywhere All at Once, Elvis, Babylon, Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, and Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
I've seen some of those.
Yep.
Okay. I don't feel that Marvel movies deserve to win Oscars, but that's... And I'm not taking this as a I have anything to do with... I have issues with the Black Panther franchise, but that's completely unrelated. Nothing to do with costuming. Mm-hmm. I get, okay.
Yep.
Not what I would have picked. I didn't even remember it came out that year, let alone...
Yeah, Dune was nominated the previous year.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And Cruella won the year Dune was nominated.
Oh, I have not seen that. That's
Emma Stone, fashion design. Yeah, that makes sense.
There's a movie I didn't think I'd like and really do like and think about quite a lot.
Devil Wears Prada. Yeah, a fantastic movie.
Yeah. Getting back to the movies we actually watched for this episode, you're listening to, folks at home or in the garden or wherever you are right now, possibly in transit. I think it's very wholesome. It does feel... The ending for Muppets from Space is very wholesome, where Gonzo's just like, no, I know what I am now, and now I can stay and be myself.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wholesome... And a very positive, like, mental outlook. Mm. Being on a discovery of self, you know, a journey of self-discovery. I was going to say a discovery of self-journey. then to realize what you are, and then instead of leaving everybody behind,
yeah,
you know, if you were confused about your identity, and then just being like, well, you guys didn't accept me for who I am, so I'm going to now abandon you and go live with my new friends. You know, that's kind of...
Yeah, it's an interesting... I have complicated feelings about Muppets from Space. Because, as previously mentioned, I love Gonzo.
Yeah.
And very distinctly, throughout... like, pretty much all other Muppet media, Gonzo is very confident in himself.
Yeah.
And Gonzo is a weirdo, but unashamed to be a weirdo and just do what he wants to do and be how he wants to be. To compare him to another Everything Everywhere All at Once character, in most cases, Gonzo is more like Waymond.
Yeah.
And this character of who knows who they are and chooses to have a positive outlook all the time. So it's really... interesting to me that they chose to do this movie where he has this crisis of confidence and we get to see the vulnerabilities. And to some extent, like, part of me is like, is that in line with who his character is normally? But A, as we've already said, it's in Muppet canon. This is a movie that the Muppets made.
Yeah.
Not actually accurate to Muppet history. But also, I do think... that it still works in terms of, you know, not every, people aren't confident all the time.
Yeah.
The people that you know that are confident and happy and sure of themselves 90% of the time will always have moments where they don't feel that way. And it is, you know, it's important to show that. And I feel like it's a movie that really resonates with me. I feel like I'm going to cry, sorry. But it's, you know, it's this idea of this character who just doesn't know who he is. And, like, I mean, I feel like I felt like that when I was younger. You know, that I was the weirdo and confidently the weirdo and happy to be the weirdo. And then I went through this phase where I was like, is there something wrong with me, actually?
Yeah.
And, you know... I can't remember how much we've discussed queer identity in our previous Pride episodes, but I would identify somewhere on the asexual spectrum, and as a teenager going through, you know, puberty and going through that realm of time where all my friends started getting interested in sex,
yeah,
and I was like, you know, at first, being very confidently me, being like, what's wrong with these weirdos?
Yeah.
But then as it happens to everyone, and you're the only person, they start looking at you going like, "What? Why are you not like everyone else?" And I didn't have the words to describe what I felt like. You know, people nowadays have much more access to information, but for me, I just felt broken. Yeah. I just felt like there was something wrong with me. And I think, from a queer perspective, Muppets from Space is actually really good at identifying, you know, whether or not this is what they meant from it, as the filmmakers, of having this character who is weird and is loved for being weird. You know, everyone, I mean, I don't know if everyone, but, like, everyone I know is a fan of Gonzo. No one hates Gonzo that I know of. And a lot of people really love Gonzo. And it's, you know, he is really weird. He's loved for being weird. He is totally different. He's a, you know, he's a whatever in his own words. And to have this movie where they go, actually, you know, he doesn't always feel this. He doesn't always know that he's loved. He doesn't always feel accepted. You know, he feels, you know, because the other Muppets do love him and accept him. But they take it for granted that he knows that, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the concept of it. And then you have, like, you know, where he's trying to say, oh, this is what I need to do this. And they're going, like, that's a bit weird. Like, don't do that. Even to the point that after they rescue him, they say, like, you know, we're going to go home now. And he's like, no, we need to go to the beach for this. And they're like, oh, no, he still believes that we have to do this thing.
Yeah.
And to have him have this whole, you know, concept of being alone, being one of a kind, and feeling that isolation, even amongst a group of people who do love and accept him. Yeah, I think it, like I think to, for me that's what makes it a queer movie.
Yeah.
And I think they had to know what they were doing to some extent, because there is that, you know, that interaction he has with Kermit where he, you know, where he basically comes out of the closet as an alien. Yeah. I think I took down the quote while we were watching it, but I think I only took down part of it. But I just remember thinking, like, yeah, because he said, I've always had, because I can't remember what he says first. He says something to him about, you know, even if you can't accept it or something like that. He says, I've always had alien tendencies and this just makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's this idea of being like, you know, this is me. Whether you choose to accept it or not, this is me. And Gonzo, up until near the end of the movie, believes that he's not accepted. And, you know, and he's so thrilled to have these people come down and show him that, like, there are other people like him, that he's not totally, he hasn't just come out of nowhere, he's not broken, there's not something wrong with him. There are others who feel the same way, who are the same way, who act the same way. And that's all he needs to know. He doesn't need to, like, shift his whole everything to be like them and follow them. And the fact that his friends and his family do show up with him, or do show up for him, you know, in that moment, that's when he can go, like, you know what, actually, I'm okay here with these people, and I know who I am, and I know who my family is, and it's this found family that I have created for myself. Yeah. And I think in Everything Everywhere All at Once, you get that moment, because Evelyn gets it from Waymond.
Yeah. And the googly eyes.
Yeah, because she doesn't have... Because Joy on the surface, wants to convince Evelyn that nothing matters, that nihilism is the only way forward, that they should go into the bagel together and just disappear. But Evelyn has always had Waymond, and Waymond is this force in her life for good. And you have this moment where this made me really emotional. I don't know why.
Well, I know what thumbnail we use for this episode.
But you have this moment where Alpha Waymond has died. And Alpha Waymond was the one controlling Waymond for most of the time. And, you know, that this has been happening. He's been doing all the fighting.
Raccoon Waymond.
Yeah, he's been raccooning. He's been raccooning Waymond. And he doesn't... So he's not there anymore, and the Waymond from her universe has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
He, like, when she tries to explain things to him first, he thinks he's insane, but then immediately gets on board with it, because that's what she's telling him is happening, and he believes her, and he loves her, and he trusts her. But you get this moment where everything is totally chaotic. She is going through this thing with Joy in another universe, and but experiencing all the universes at once, and without knowing what she's doing, she stabs him.
Yeah.
And Waymond turns around and protects her.
Yeah.
And just says, you know, I don't know what's going on here. I'm really confused. I don't know what's happening. I don't know why everyone wants to hurt each other, but can we just be kind?
Yeah.
Can we just be kind to each other? And at the same time, she's talking to Waymond in a universe where they didn't get together.
Yeah.
Where she chose her family over him and her career over him, and they've gone separately.
She gets mugged and then focuses completely on martial arts.
Yes, where she becomes a kung fu person, and she's at the movie premiere, and he said he saw the poster and he shows up, and he's also become really successful. You know, and at the beginning of the movie, when she sees that universe first, she says, like, you know, both of our, you know, she's like, my life would have been so good if I hadn't met you.
Yeah.
And that's what she focuses on at that point, because that's when they're in this really bad part of the marriage. But at this point, she's reconciling with him in this other universe. And what he says to her there is, you know, that you always believed that my positivity, my positive outlook, you know, my kindness was naivety. And he says, it's not naivety, it's strategic, it's purposeful.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I choose to do in order to, you know, to make my life better and to make things better. And she's seeing that in that universe and seeing him in this universe. And then when she actually goes to try and stop Joy, what she does is she channels Waymond to the point that she focuses on this googly eye, which is what, because, you know, her big annoyance with him is that he, you know, in his, like, positive, jovial, like, naive self, he's putting googly eyes on everything and naming things and saying, you know, it's happier this way.
Yeah.
And she decides to fight with kindness, and instead of using these kung fu skills that she's got, she uses the chaotic energy that she's now got from being able to go through different multiverses to give all these people things that make them happier.
And when
she gets to Joy, you know, she stops her, and then Joy convinces her to let her go. And then you have that moment where she, you know, because Joy's whole thing is like, now that you're fractured and splintered like me, you can't tune out everything because you're experiencing all of the universes all at once.
Yeah.
And then Evelyn says to her, you know, I can tune it out because I've seen every possibility. I've seen all these universes where my life is so much better, where there's all this blah, 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 you know, like all these good things. And here I am, you know, standing with you where I'm a failure. Everything in my life has been a failure. You're a mess, et cetera, et cetera. But I choose to be here, and I choose to be with you. And that's, you know, Joy getting the acceptance that she needs, and realizing that there is, you know, there is a way to do it. And it's, as Waymond's put it, to, like, strategically and purposefully choose to be kind.
Yeah.
To know that the world is horrible, and that there's, you know, all this shit going on and all this stuff that you can't control, but still choosing to see the positive and choosing to be a positive force in the world.
That's beautiful, sweetie.
Anyway, Waymond, I took a note at one point in the when this was happening in the film where I just said, I think I literally just wrote, maybe I didn't write it. I thought I wrote Waymond is Sam Gamgee, but what I actually wrote is, there is some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. Because that's the same energy. Yeah. You know, that it's this total, that, you know, these, because Evelyn and Joy both become kind of all-powerful to some extent and can unlock all of these different abilities and experiences and memories, whatever, to do this Matrix Kung Fu shit.
Yeah.
Waymond is totally normal.
Yeah.
He's this, and it's the same with Sam Gamgee. Normal, unassuming guy that people assume is stupid or naive or, you know, not really important in the grand scheme of things. Just some dude who chooses to never give up hope and chooses to never stop being kind and says, you know, no matter what you are seeing, no matter what you are thinking, no matter what you are feeling, there is something good still there. And there is something good to be found, and we need to hold on to that piece of goodness.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's saying to her there, and it very much is the you know, there is some good in this world and it's worth fighting for. And that is what motivates her to then, you know, not go through the bagel and not give up on all universes.
You want to focus on some trivia there? Really?
Yeah, sure. It's, I don't know.
You're in deep in this.
Yeah, I just think, like, I think it's a beautiful film. I think...
Which one?
Everything Everywhere All at Once. I mean, I think Muppets from Space also covers, you know, not to the same extent, but it does cover the same messages. I think the people who hate Everything Everywhere All at Once are looking at the ridiculousness. They're looking at the silliness. They're looking at hot dog fingers and people shoving awards into their butts and all this, like,
to give them powers.
This weird nonsense that's happening, and overlooking the fact that at its core, you know, there's this really strong message about the world that we live in, where there's so much terrible stuff happening all the time. And, you know, people want to give up.
Yeah.
You know, and to say, look, you can choose to not do that. You can choose to be hopeful. You can choose to put whatever positive energy you can back into the world. I just think it's a fantastic movie. I don't think when I watched it first, I expected it to be so emotional, because I think I cried watching it both times.
Right.
I feel like it's a very powerful movie, and I'm glad that it got so much recognition. And if people still don't like it, you know, fair enough. Into trivia. We go Muppets from Space first. I didn't take many trivia notes from this. It was the first Muppet film to not be a traditional musical. So the soundtrack is primarily soul and funk music.
Yeah.
The whole concept of it came from the song I'm Going to Go Back There Someday, which is... You haven't seen the Muppet movie, right, from 1979?
Well, I don't think I have.
You should watch that at some point. Well, it's, you know, it's a movie... In Muppet canon, it's a movie that they make about their origin story, so it's supposed to have some basis in reality, but also is not, like, a documentary. It's a movie that they have made to describe how they met. But when they meet Gonzo first, he sings this song called I'm Going to Go Back There Someday, which is you know, about him feeling like he doesn't quite belong here, and he doesn't know where he came from or where he does belong, but he knows he feels like somewhere there's a connection to some place, and he's never been there, but he's going to go back there someday. And it's a really beautiful piece of music. I really enjoy that song. But yeah, so apparently the concept for the movie came from that song, and also they recorded a new version of the song for the movie, and then it never got used in the movie.
Right.
It was included on the soundtrack album that they released. But it wasn't in the movie. And then, yeah, the thing I said about them coming out in the same year as Star Wars prequels, which is weird. For Everything Everywhere All at Once... Michelle Yeoh said that she was completely out of her comfort zone doing the film, but that she really wanted to do it because she'd waited a really long time to get a script like that.
Yeah.
Because she said as you get older, the box that they put you in gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, suddenly doing a movie that is a comedy, physical comedy, action, horror, every single genre in one movie. One of the things that's interesting... It's a nuance that we don't really get as people who don't speak these languages. But Evelyn speaks to her father in Cantonese, but she speaks to Waymond in Mandarin.
Okay.
And it's to do with the cultural differences in their upbringing and the class differences. You know, that her father actually speaks a totally different version of Chinese to Waymond does. And then Joy... You know,
speaks
like bad Chinese, and Evelyn speaks to her in Mandarin, but then she's trying to speak to the grandfather, and he's like, he doesn't understand her. But it's really symbolic of them not being able to communicate properly, not being able to speak to each other clearly in on a level where they all understand each other. Apparently they originally wrote the script with Jackie Chan in mind for the lead role.
Right.
And then they decided to change it to being a woman so that they could have that, you know, the husband-wife relationship that they have in it. And as soon as they switched the script to being a woman, they wanted Michelle Yeoh in. This is something I said, I kind of touched on this with you earlier, that I said we might talk about something similar in the episode. So the writer-directors, Daniel Scheiner and Daniel Kwan, had originally intended for Evelyn to have undiagnosed ADHD. So they said, like, they've admitted that it was almost an insensitive idea, because their concept was, you know, what if the main character is so distractible that she can tap into other universes?
Right.
But they researched ADHD, and Daniel Kwan discovered that he had undiagnosed ADHD through researching a film, like, oh, I'm going and getting a diagnosis, like, oh, that makes sense.
It's almost like that guy who was researching psychopaths and, like, had a bunch of students and also took the test and was just like, oh man, I need a... One of these students has got really high, like, scored really high on this test. I should probably talk to them. And flipped it over and it was his own test. And he was just like,
whoops.
What? I don't know how to feel about this now.
So it's a couple of things about, because we were talking about the Oscars. So Michelle Yeoh was the first Asian actress to ever win a Best Acting Oscar.
That was for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
No, for no? this.
Was it?
For Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I am le shocked.
But also, for their performances in this film, Michelle Yeoh and Ki Hoi Kwan became 2 out of 10 performers in the history of the Oscars to have won an acting Oscar for playing a character who speaks in a language other than English.
Wow.
So it's interesting that that's, you know, that 2 out of 10 of them were the same year for the same film. Yeah. And it's also, they were the first ones who whose languages were non-European languages.
Right.
Because the others were French, German, Italian, Spanish.
Of course.
This film has still not been released in a lot of countries because of the queer representation in it. So a lot of countries in the Middle East, for example, have not released this film, will not release this film because it, you know, includes queer characters in it. And then this was one that I just didn't know and I thought it'd be fun to include, which is that Ratatouille. So there is a universe where... So Evelyn mistakenly called...
Ratatouille.
Misremembers Ratatouille as being about a raccoon called Ratatouille.
Yeah.
And then it turns out one of her alternate universe selves is working in a restaurant with a guy who is being controlled by a raccoon. So the raccoon, Ratatouille, is voiced by Randy Newman. Which is funny because he has so much involvement in Pixar movies. Yeah. So it's a nice little nod. I did want to talk about budget and box office.
Okay.
Have you looked at these at all?
No.
So the budget for Everything Everywhere All at Once is often, it's commonly misrepresented as being $25 million, but the producers come out and said actually the budget was only $14.3 million.
Okay.
Do you want to guess what the budget for Muppets from Space was?
25.
Yes. In 1999.
Yeah.
So adjusted for inflation, closer to $50 million.
Yeah. Muppets are expensive.
Would you have guessed that Muppets from Space was like more than 3 times the cost of Everything Everywhere All at Once? Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the quality of those two films, I wonder how much of it went on just, like, getting Ray Liotta and all the other cameos.
I think the whole point of cameos is people don't get paid.
No, they get paid.
I don't know. I think Muppets are expensive.
Yeah.
Not saying, like, destroying an entire office building wouldn't have been expensive as well, and all the weird stuff that happens in the background and... You know, the filming locations and other things. But yeah, you don't have to make... You don't have to spend a lot of money to make a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's hilarious that like, if you were going to guess which of these two movies cost more to make...
Yeah.
I don't think you'd pick Muppets from Space. In terms of box office, Everything Everywhere All at Once made $143 million in box office. Muppets from Space made $22 million. Oof. So they did not break even. What was interesting was I had a look when I was trying to...
But then Muppet movies make a lot of money in...
Video sales and things.
Especially in 99.
Well, this was the last one... This got a theatrical release, but it was the last one for a long time to get one until The Muppets in 2011.
Right.
That was the next theatrically released Muppet movie. So, I mean... They kind of went out in a low to the point that I think I read that when they were promoting the Muppets, the 2011 movie, in some places, like to get distributors to put it out, they were like, "Well, do you really want your last Muppet movie that you distribute to have been Muppets from Space?" So it's kind of generally accepted to be a bit of a garbage movie. I still enjoy it. I mean, I appreciate it. It's not necessarily a good movie.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy it. Whereas I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is an incredibly made movie.
I kind of want to watch it now, but, you know.
Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah.
Just watch it again.
Yeah, just watch it now.
Just go back and watch it again. It's such an incredible movie. Do you feel like we talked about LGBTQ representation enough? Or
The only other thing I would put is the lighting.
The lighting?
Yeah, because, like, of just... how important lighting is to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a really good job of like being able to highlight people and scenes in a way where it does feel very either, you know, otherworldly or very intense and very intimate.
Yeah.
And I think that really does help with the old, what's the joke of bisexual lighting?
Bisexual lighting.
Yeah.
That's not bisexual lighting. You're being pursued by the thing.
Yeah.
Well, the bisexual lighting is only if it's in, like, pink and blue.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they do. I think Joy is supposed to be just gay.
Yeah.
I think she's just fully lesbian. Gonzo is definitely non-binary. He's also just like, in terms of, I know we talked about costuming in Everything Everywhere All at Once, but Gonzo's outfits are like iconic in the queer community.
Yeah. I think. The other one that my favorite is the Scooby-Doo gang, the Scooby Squad, is also very, every single stereotype of a lesbian.
Yeah, yeah. And you get that with, I think it's just queer folk in general. There was a meme that went around for a long time, but it was just four images. One of them was, like, a frog in, like, beige pants and a brown jacket. One of them was someone in dungarees, and one of them was Gonzo in his, I think, his yellow shirt with chili peppers on it.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the fourth one was, but it was like, yep, every queer person is one of these four. And it's like, oh. And it's very, very accurate. I think he's iconic in his outfits. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I feel like if anyone is shocked to hear me say that Gonzo is LGBTQ representation, I don't know what you've been watching. Because, like, I don't think there's ever been a time that he hasn't. And I do, like, in terms of gender, I feel like I have on multiple occasions referred to myself as a whatever, like Gonzo.
Yeah, yeah.
That is how I feel. Gender is like a whole realm that I don't want to delve into because I don't know. It's a mess. But I feel like just having, you know, being able to be like, you know, I'm like Gonzo. Yeah. That's what I am.
Yeah.
It works for me. and I think this is probably the queerest Muppet movie.
Thank you for listening to our podcast this Pride Month. Obviously, there'll be another one before the end of the month.
Yeah.
So look forward to that if this is your kind of thing. We don't shame around here.
Yeah, the next one will be more obviously LGBTQ related films.
So if you want to go to our website, where you can find our RSS feeds to go to all the places where you can listen to a podcast, because people listen to podcasts on different things. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's just on Spotify. It is ittakes2.co.nz, and you can also find a link to all the previous episodes. Sign up for our newsletter. I don't think anybody actually does that.
Yeah. It's just a thing. I've never sent one out because no one signed up.
Yep.
If you do, I'll have to suddenly start doing a newsletter.
Yeah, please don't cause more work. Do a thing that I don't want you to do. Join our Discord. You can talk to us. Tell us how you feel about episodes. Date back to the beginning. We don't need to be the current episode. And thank you for listening.
Goodbye.